Who doesn't love a good story? When it comes to communicating scientific research, learning how to tell an intriguing story may be to your benefit. Studies have shown that framing and storytelling have been effective in communicating science to the general public, particularly when it comes to explaining complex and abstract topics. But how can you tell the story of your research? From the University of Central Florida in Orlando, I'm Rachel Wimmer, and this is Research Decoded. Once upon a time, there was a young researcher who made some incredible discoveries. Yeah, okay, sometimes stories can come off as a bit cheesy, but they're a great way to engage a non-scientific audience and can help you get your foot in the door when you're trying to explain your research. On today's episode, we talked to two UCF researchers who have had a lot of experience telling the story of their research.
I'm Philip Metzger, and I'm a planetary researcher, planetary scientist here at the University of Central Florida.
Dr. Metzger has been a force in communicating his research, catching the eye of all kinds of media outlets. In fact, prior to this interview, he was preparing for an interview for a new series on Netflix. So what does he study that's of such great interest to researchers and reporters alike?
Well, I do planetary science, but in particular, I focus on the surfaces of the moon, Mars, and asteroids. So studying how the soil behaves, and even more particularly, I work on technologies, developing technologies that would interact with the soil on those planets. I study how rocket exhaust blows the soil during lunar and Martian landings, and how to mine the soil, how to extract ice from it, and how to use the soil as a building material to 3D print habitats for astronauts. And it's not just playing with dirt, so we have to work on the an understanding of the soil, because we don't actually have Martian soil in our lab to work with. So we have to create artificial Martian soil, and we want to make sure that its properties are the same as the real soil so that the robots we build to work with it will come out correct.
That sounds very intriguing, but I'm sure the actual science of all of that is very complex. Have you ever found it difficult when talking to someone not in your field to explain what exactly it is that you do?
I guess so, yeah. Of course, when I tell people I work on Moon and the Mars and stuff, the first thing they say is, why isn't Pluto a planet? And so they always ask related questions, but they're not focusing on exactly what I do. They don't understand the requirements. Why would we build a habitat out of dirt on Mars? Why don't we just bring a spacecraft? In order to get them to the point of appreciating it, we have to explain that there's radiation in space, and radiation shielding takes a lot of mass, and launching it from the Earth would be very expensive, so we want to use the mass that's there on Mars. So there's a lot of explaining that has to go on before they begin to understand why we're even doing it in the first place.
So what kind of audiences do you find yourself communicating your research to?
Well, in the space community, there are a lot of people who are extremely enthusiastic, and so I'm very active on social media, and I also get a lot of requests for interviews from newspapers and magazines and things like that. Even the Discovery Channel will ask for interviews. So it's a broad swath of the general public, but there is already a lot of general excitement about space that we tap into. Sometimes I'll speak to a group of students, either at a school or podcast I was asked to speak to, where they're targeting students. And so I will try to make it inspirational, because in that case, the goal is to get the students excited about learning. If I'm talking to an older age group, or let's say I'm talking to a technical group, other scientists, then I would go more into the technical details about how we do the work. If it's an adult broadcast like NPR, they want to talk about the policy issues. Why does the United States need to focus on this area of research? Why does it make sense for us? So what is the payback for the public? So you do have to think about the audience and think about what they're going to get from it. And you also have to take into account the broadcast organization. So NPR, they want to serve the public, but they also want to make sure that they build their own audience. So you have to give them content that they think is exciting to build the audience so that they'll keep coming back to you asking you for more interviews.
Some of Dr. Metzger's most effective stories didn't have to be generated from scratch. Instead, he listened to how his audience was responding to his research.
So sometimes the public will actually help you spin your story, or the media outlet will help you. So we recently had a project where we built a small spacecraft that would be about the size of a microwave oven that could hop on low gravity planets. So it could hop on the moon or on one of the moons of Jupiter, Europa, or Pluto even, and it has drills so it mines up the surface material and extracts water, and then it uses the water instead of rocket fuel. It just heats it, and then it ejects the water through a rocket nozzle as steam. And using steam propulsion is not as efficient as using real rocket fuel, but on a low gravity body, it's enough. And there's water everywhere on the surfaces of these bodies. Well, not everywhere on the moon, but there is water in the poles of the moon, and the surfaces of Europa and Pluto are literally covered everywhere with volatiles that you can turn into steam. So it's a good idea for a spacecraft that will never run out of propellant. As long as you have energy, you can keep mining and having more propellant. So as soon as we started to talk to the public, they all said, oh, that is so steampunk. And then they started calling it the steampunk starship. And I was like, wait, you know, it's not a starship. It just hops on planets. And they're like, no, it's the steampunk starship. And I thought, well, that is really cool. I'm just going to retire now because I'll never do better than the inventor of the steampunk starship.
Why does he find it important to communicate his research? Because he knows that engaging the public is critical in the advancement of science.
Ultimately, the politicians aren't going to fund this kind of research unless the public wants it. And so in order to make sure that this kind of research keeps getting funded, we have to make sure the public understands it and wants it. In space research, that's especially true because it has high visibility all the time. The government is always addressing NASA's budget and how much NASA is spending on human spaceflight versus robotic planetary spaceflight. It's always a political issue. So by educating the public, making sure that those congresspersons have a constituency that appreciate that work makes it easier for the members of Congress to vote for the funding of this work.
Hi, my name is Dr. Pamela Wisneski. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Central Florida in the Department of Computer Science.
Like Dr. Metzger, Dr. Wisneski has had a lot of experience communicating her research to many different audiences. But unlike Martian soil, she finds herself communicating research that is much more relatable.
My research is in the field of human-computer interaction and lies at the intersection of social computing and privacy, how people use technology to engage with one another, as well as using it to protect themselves while engaging with others. At that intersection, my research is primarily in the area of adolescent online safety, or how teens encounter risks online and how they can effectively cope with those risks in a way that they can beneficially engage with others through internet-enabled technologies.
Even though your research deals with things that people experience on a daily basis, I'm sure you've had instances where you might have found it difficult to explain your research to others.
Yes, definitely. I have this strange dichotomy in my research. On one hand, where it's very relatable to particularly parents and families, but because it's so relatable, people often mistake their opinions as relevant as some of the research that we've done, like evidence-based practices of what we found work and don't work within families. And so that's a really hard tension to navigate. So for instance, I could be sitting at an airport waiting for my flight, and I'll tell somebody, oh, I do research on adolescent online safety. And they start in on this very long story about, oh, well, you know what my daughter did when she was a teenager, and therefore I think that we should, you know, keep teens away from technology as long as possible. My daughter's not going to be able to get da-da-da until she's in her 20s and out of my house. And it's hard because I need to respect their opinions and their lived experiences, but I also need to be able to educate them on what we've found in our research and resilience-based practices versus the effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of abstinence-based approaches. So I think to some extent it's a little bit different than some of the other scientific professions where they're not doing something that's as relatable to the outside public. But in many ways, there are things about doing scholarly work and promoting science that are difficult no matter what field you're in.
Besides parents, what other audiences do you find yourself needing to translate your research for?
So outside of my adolescent online safety research, I do research in the area of usable privacy and security. So trying to understand how people make decisions about what information they're going to disclose online or what relationship connections they're going to form on social media, and working through some of those privacy decisions that we make in everyday life. So the audience there is much more broad. It's general internet users. But also, I have to talk to the cybersecurity and privacy community in general, because, for instance, I'm one of the cluster members of the cybersecurity and privacy cluster here at UCF, and I often have to be the devil's advocate in the room, because I have to make sure that they remember that the typical end user's primary goal when they go online isn't to be more private. Privacy is usually a secondary goal, and their primary goal is usually to socially connect with others or to get social support or emotional support or find information resources. And so we often have to take a more user-centered approach instead of a paternalistic approach of saying, like, well, those stupid end users, like, how can we help them be more aware of their privacy and not disclose their personal information online? And so my audience as a human-computer interaction researcher, in some ways, I'm a bridge between the computer scientists and the cybersecurity specialists and the people who are steeped in technology and the general population and the public. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's easier for me to do the translation of my research into practice. One of the things that I found, especially after talking to quite a few news reporters, is they really want some good sound bites and they want practical advice. They don't really want you to talk to them about correlations and causality or p-values. They want to talk about what can be done in the real world.
To best help her audience relate to her research, Dr. Wisniewski finds it helpful to use analogies.
So one of the things that I use frequently when I'm trying to communicate my research to reporters is I try to use analogies. So take examples from the real world and apply that to my research and show the parallels. And I think that works a lot better than just getting steeped in my research and talking about my methods. They really just want you to get to the key results and the implications of those results. It's your job to make sure that you're giving them the bigger picture of the forest instead of focusing too much on the individual trees.
Above all, she embraces being a scholar activist.
One of the things as a William T. Grant scholar that we talk about a lot in our mentoring meetings with the other early career scholars is the idea of being a scholar activist and the importance of public scholarship. Often we measure impact in terms of our Google Scholar H index and our citation counts or the impact factor of a journal. But realistically, we need to talk more about the broader impacts to society and being able to communicate our research effectively in a way that it makes a difference for the general population, as well as it can inform policy and practices that are currently being used in the world. Technology is pervasive. And it's not just technologists who are using technology anymore. And so we need to think about the unintended consequences of our research findings. We need to think about what the ethical implications are of some of the research that we're doing. And we need to be socially responsible in terms of the types of research that we're doing and what can be done with it that go beyond the application that we did in our own research.
I want to thank Drs. Metzger and Wisniewski for speaking with us today and the UCF Office of Research for supporting this show. Next week on the podcast, we're learning how to ace any interview situation. We'll hear from Zenaida Katala, the Executive Director of Communications in the Office of Research in the College of Graduate Studies, to hear some of her best tips and tricks for interviews. We'll see you next time.